Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. I butchered the first intro, so this is the second. That's something you'll never hear from any other podcast. As always, Gym Class All-Stars sponsored by Vigit. Use fake coins, win real prizes, show us how good you are at betting. Like we've mentioned before on this podcast, the NBA season playoff final contest is going on. Show us how good you are. If you are the top 100 of that betting contest, betting lead, you can win upwards of $1,000, and it's free money for no risk. So you might as well do that. Use promo code ALLSTARS when you download the app. Help us out. But folks, let's get into it. We, like we always say, we're in June. Sports are kind of winding down, so we're getting probably a little bit more sad. But some good news and some glimmer of hope in the wonderful world of baseball. The Rays have called up their number one draft pick. And as a 23-year-old, this also makes me sad because this man right here is doing a lot more than I should be doing at a ripe old age. Do you know how old he is?
Oh, I don't even know if he's 20. He's young. Yeah, hold on. Give me 1 second here to do my last little bit of research while we stall to the old Jeopardy song. But this guy is the number one prospect in all of baseball. This has been expected all season to happen, and now it is finally here.
So yeah, Wander Franco is the number one overall prospect for the Tampa Bay Rays. He is 20. He was born in 2001, which makes me feel super old. But yeah, he is being promoted and will be making his debut tonight against the Red Sox. So we will be rooting for the Rays because, you know, it's Boston. Why wouldn't we?
Exactly. Yeah, no, he was just to put it in a little perspective, in the 39 games he had played so far in AAA, he was batting .315 with a .367 on base percentage, 7 home runs, 5 steals. There were a couple guys, you know, I forget the name of the player, but someone had gotten called up ahead of him. There was potential that another one of their prospects would too. They decided to go with Franco, and he will make his debut, like we said, today. We'll let you know how he does. But again, the number one prospect in baseball, that's going to, you know, be pretty big news regardless of what league you're the biggest fan of. So Wander Franco, best of luck for a future career, you know?
It's interesting.
Maybe that cornerstone.
Yeah, the Rays are in second, though, half game back behind the Red Sox. So these games do matter. I guess because, you know, we're fun like this. Let's predict the stat line for the night. I'm feeling 1-for-4, a single. That's all he's getting. But he'll be batting .250, which is quite serviceable in the MLB.
I'm gonna say 2-for-3 with a run scored.
Ooh, okay. All right. Any doubles? Nah, just 2 singles.
There's a potential for an extra base hit. You know, he's batting second in the order, but I'll say 2 singles.
All right. Well, it is right now the bottom of the first, so he'll be up second. So maybe by the end of this, we'll keep you updated and see how right I am or how wrong I am or how right Robbie is. If Robbie's right, though, the Rays are going to clean house in the Red Sox tonight.
100%. A little bit more for baseball here. Just, new series starting on a Tuesday here for the next week. One of the big ones, the Dodgers and the Padres set to go on what I believe is a 3-game series in San Diego. Dodgers currently 2.5 games ahead of San Diego for the 2 seed. For the second best record in the NL, they are actually both the wild card teams right now, as San Francisco is the number one overall seed in the NL, which is absolutely crazy. But so that just goes to show how important this series is. The first pitching matchup today will be Clayton Kershaw versus Blake Snell. Kershaw's been dishing recently, and Blake Snell a little bit less so. So maybe need a little bit extra offense from the San Diego bats tonight, but should be a great series and a crucial series for both those teams, you know, now about midway through the season.
I know we love to turn it into talking about ourselves, but every now and again, I look at the standings for MLB and I'll see the Phillies in second place. And I'm like, that's not bad. And then I look and just see how stacked the NL West is. And I'm like, huh, cool. So the two teams that don't win the division are going to have to try and fight each other to even get in the playoffs, which is just incredible. So that is going to be, not to sound cliche, a race, but slugfest. It's going to be intense, and we're all here for it because, you know, that West Coast rivalry has been revitalized in baseball, especially since the Padres finally don't suck.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. It's crazy to see all that West Coast baseball. Plus, Cody Bellinger set to come back, I believe, tomorrow for the Dodgers. So even more excitement in that series. The Giants, though. I mean, we've talked about them a little bit, but the resurgence of Buster Posey, the excellent play of their pitching, Guzman, Desclafani, Cueto. They're running the table right now. All right, that's pretty much it for baseball, though. It's a long season, so, you know, most of the news is kind of just like people coming on and off the IL. The wins leader, Aaron Saval, went on the IL. That was pretty much the only other thing I really had. So he'll be out, or he may go on the IL, so he'll be out for a little bit. I'm going to move into football for just a second here. This is the slow part of the offseason, but you got a little story about Timmy Birdie, so we're going to take it away here.
Yeah, that's his name, Timmy Birdie. Yeah, so Tom Brady recently went on an HBO show, like one of the specials, to talk about his, you know, career. And one of the things he got into is his free agency last offseason. And we all know he signed with the Bucks, you know, won the Super Bowl. But he said in the interview that there was a team that was interested to the very end, that he was also very interested in going to. And at the last minute, they said, nope, we're going to stick with our QB. And Tom Brady was like, what? You passed up on me. That's not even him being cocky. That's just kind of confusion on their parts. So I brought this up because I want to speculate, because we all love doing this. We're all sports fans. Who that team was. I saw a list, and there are a few options. So I think the list goes, it's the Chargers, the Raiders, the Bears, and there's a fourth team I gave you. Oh, the 49ers. That was the other one. The Chargers were a front runner, and I really did think Tom Brady was going to go to Los Angeles last year. He's got homes there. It's sunny. It's warm. The Chargers are desperate for a Super Bowl. All signs line that way. I don't think that was the team that backed out him. They were going to start Tyrod Taylor, but also they drafted Justin Herbert. So I think they knew Tyrod wasn't the long-term solution. So I'd have a hard time seeing Los Angeles pass up on them. The Chargers do like to do stuff like that. It's a little bit incompetent, but I'm going to say it's not them. That leaves us the Bears, the Raiders, and the wonderful 49ers. As much as I want to think it's the Bears, I don't think it is, because I really don't. Tom Brady to me does not seem like a guy who wants to go back to the Cole when he's 40.
There's also no way anyone's so stupid to think that they would prefer Mitch Trubisky to Tom Brady.
You know, it is the Bears, though. That is the true problem.
I understand.
We're going to not say it's the Bears, though, just because I don't think Tom Brady was truly interested in going there. We got Vegas and we have the 49ers. Part of me for a storyline wants to say it was the 49ers because Jimmy G's there. Jimmy G had just won the NFC, went to a Super Bowl, and maybe Tom Brady tried to force his way in there to kind of disrupt Jimmy G. Maybe he's still a little bitter that Belichick wanted him over Brady. Who knows? But I think my gut's got to go with Vegas. I really do. I to me, Las Vegas could have used a quarterback. I think they were a little bit stuck on Derek Carr.
Yeah, I agree. Because Derek Carr, it wasn't quite like Carson Wentz and how impactful it was, but also had one of those years where he was an MVP candidate, got hurt at the end, forfeit his MVP candidacy, and then kind of fell into this, you know, mediocre section of middle-tier quarterbacks. So it's understandable where the Raiders were like, oh, maybe he could do that again. Maybe it's not worth spending all this extra money on a dude who's going to be here for, what, a year or two. And, you know, I personally think that was obviously a really stupid decision. Most people, you know, in hindsight would. As much as I always hated him on the Patriots, I always respected how good Tom Brady was. And if you have a chance for Tom Brady, like, And you chose Derek Carr. It just sounds like such a Raiders thing to have happen. It sounds like such a Gruden thing to do.
And the other piece of information that I really think leans me to believe it was the Raiders, the O-line. The O-line's great there. It is the best part of the Las Vegas Raiders. Not to say the 49ers don't have a good line, but the Raiders offensive line is something else, especially when Josh Jacobs was running every which way. So that was kind of an issue. They didn't have great receivers at the time. I mean, they got Jeudy in the draft, but to me, everything was there but a QB. I mean, their defense is still suspect, but like you have Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Honestly, let us know who you think. Maybe we're all just wrong. Maybe there's another team that was a dark horse,
The
but
Steelers had faith in Ben.
yes, it was. He wanted to go to Pittsburgh. He
Yep.
said, "I've lived in Austin area my entire life. I want to go to Pittsburgh because that's what every
Glamour
QB
city.
wants to do in the twilight of their career."
100%.
Boy, one can dream, but also it'd be funny if they blew a chance and then went with what's his name? Dwayne Haskins.
Don't talk to me about Dwayne Haskins. He's gonna be a running back.
He's gonna win the division.
He'll
We
be
know
tight
he
end.
is.
Next Tim Tebow.
God.
All right, so that's pretty much it for football, though. Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes are both going to be the Madden cover for 2021, the MVP edition, despite the fact that neither of them were last season's MVP. But regardless of that fact, they will be the cover athletes. Was kind of the only other really noteworthy thing in the NFL. So we are
So
going to move on here. What's up?
does that mean the Madden curse applies to both of them? Like, are they both gonna get like injured?
That would be fine.
No.
That
No, because honestly, no matter how much, like, I know we want our team, respective teams to win, Patrick Mahomes to me is the most exciting quarterback to watch.
Yeah, it's fair. He looks like Kermit the Frog and sounds like Kermit the Frog.
He does not look like him, he sounds like him, and that's
He looks a
like
little.
barely, but all right, we digress. Let's move on.
We do, in fact, digress. All right, let's move into some playoff time here. Let's start with the NHL as the conference finals are well underway. We'll start in the East where the Lightning just torched the Islanders in game five, 8-0 to take a 3-2 lead over New York. You've been predicting Tampa Bay to come out of the East for most of this playoff run here. 8-0 lead, probably making you feel pretty good about that prediction right now. For the Islanders, what chance do they really have of winning the next two in a row?
I mean, they got to keep it close. Obviously, not eight
Right.
nothing. But I did watch them. I believe they played. It must have been Friday then, in that case. They kept the game extremely close, and they were able to pull out a victory. And they got out to a hot, fast start, and they have that sort of mentality where they're going to wear the other team down. And that's what they did to the Lightning. Lightning weren't able to get a lot of chances, and Islanders ended up winning to tie it up. This game, obviously, the Lightning got off to a fast start, and 8-0 is demoralizing, but also it's not the end of the world because I think you'd rather lose a game 8-0 than lose like 3-2 in double overtime. That takes the wind out of you because you've had that chance. You played the
Yeah.
entire night. You're so dead afterwards, both physically and mentally. So I still think the Lightning are going to come out on top, but the Islanders' keys to success, this is Alex's keys to success for them. Keep the game close, be aggressive. Also, don't let them score quickly, because if you can
Yeah.
keep the game close within either a goal or tied, you can pull it out if you just kind of wear them down. So they got to play the long game. The Islanders got to play the long game. Lightning got to play the short game where they just get ahead as fast as possible and maintain it.
Percent. We'll see how it goes moving forward. Game five of the other series over in the West is tonight. That would be between the Canadiens and the Golden Knights. That series is tied up at two. Man, just this Las Vegas team. I don't know what it is about them. I just always want to see them win. I can't explain it. I know they're the new guys and they piss you off a little bit, but they're this feisty group. I think they're going to do it. I think they're playing well right now. You know, it's tied up, doing all right. You still got two wins to go, but I don't know. I feel like if they can capitalize on some of the momentum they've had, you know, in the last few rounds, I think they're going to find the success they need to move on.
I would tend to agree. I mean, they're a band of misfits. I don't like them because they are so new, but at this point, it's not like 2017 or 20, whenever they went to the cup in their first year. That to me, winning the title the first year would have been kind of like, okay, that's a kind of a miracle, but also your fan base hasn't suffered at all. They were just handed a cup immediately. So now that they've had a few years under their belt, they've been playing well. Like, they're playing very consistently. To me, if they win a title this year, so be it. I think it's deserved. The Lightning will obviously stay in their way, but even this Canadiens team has been kind of feisty. They took game four in overtime, 3-2, and they're putting up game three.
Game four.
Okay. So it's 2-1. Yeah. My brain's a little fried from basketball, but we'll 100% get into that. Point being, though, Canadiens are not backing down. They were an 8 seed. They are still playing feisty. And I also do want to see your friend eat a shoe. So I'll be rooting for the Canadiens to win the cup 100%.
We're all for the old shoe eating. But yeah, we will see how that goes. And again, we will keep you guys updated as the playoffs keep moving forward. And as we get to, you know, teams clinching Stanley Cup finals berths.
All I want to announce in this podcast is when the 4K eating shoe will occur. That's all I want. I want to make a legitimate tweet to a number of our audience going, hello, we'll get a 4K video of this man eating a shoe very shortly.
We'll be all over it, guys. Don't you worry. We are here for the shoe eating, as I've stated before. Don't you worry. All right, that's what we got for the NHL, though. Again, their playoffs wrapping up rather quickly at this point. NBA still got a ways to go as the conference finals have just barely begun. Let's start with a recap of the conference semis, though. Let's start in the West with the Clippers. So with the last episode here, the Suns had already swept the Nuggets. They had clinched their spot in the conference finals. The Jazz and the Clippers. So Kawhi Leonard got hurt at the end of game four of that series after LA tied it up 2-2. They were down 2-0, tied it up 2-2. Kawhi goes down, and lo and behold, they don't skip a beat. Paul George goes from pandemic P right back to playoff P. Doing his thing, playing like back in those Indiana days when he was the go-to guy. Still no real center. They weren't really operating with a real center in that series, but it worked out. They won. They're in the conference finals. They run into Phoenix, who Chris Paul, I believe right after our episode, was diagnosed with COVID. He was going to be out because of the health and safety protocols, so he missed game one. Both him and Kawhi going to be out for game two. But in game one, Devin Booker was the story, a 40-point triple-double in the Suns' victory. A close game, a competitive game, but Phoenix able to edge them out. Going forward in this series without Paul and Leonard, what's LA going to have to do to be able to get over a little bit of that hump they're going to have to get through?
Well, I think we got to rewind a bit back to the Jazz series. Game six, the Jazz were up 25 at half. That's usually teams don't come back from that, right, Robbie?
Not to my knowledge.
Not bitter whatsoever. But what happened was you had players step up. Terrence Mann had 39 points. They came back. They won by 12. Like, that's a 37-point swing and a half, which is just incredible. The Suns are a great team. You know, we've been kind of harping on them the entire playoffs that they could really make a run if they catch fire. And they are. But even despite, you know, Devin Booker getting a triple-double, six-point game, to me, I mean, Kawhi Leonard would be the easy answer. Because once the Suns get Chris Paul back, I think it's going to be just almost too much to handle. Because he'll come back in the series, I'm pretty sure. To me, they're going to need to limit Devin. If they can hold Devin Booker, they should at least be competitive in these games. But the Suns have made use of other weapons. I mean, Mikal Bridges had a few points chip in. DeAndre Ayton played pretty well. They have shooters every which way. So basically Clippers are going to have to play up to their potential. Paul George is going to have to play like a superstar, and they're going to need to limit Booker. And that's going to come through, you know, I'd probably put Marcus Morris on him if you can. I know you got to probably leave him on the center, but Marcus Morris on defense is kind of stingy. You'll get in his face, you know, chirp at him. I think that's going to help potentially limit Booker, maybe have him lose his cool, or it may piss him off to the point where he just goes off. And that's kind of, you got to weigh those pros and cons, but I think I would, you know, bet the house and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree that maybe the best bet is just try and get up in his face without Chris Paul there, make him a little more uncomfortable, try and force him to do a little bit more with the basketball than he needs to. And that I agree with that strategy.
Put Tony out on a 10 day.
Yeah, honestly, I can't imagine Tony Allen wouldn't say yes to that. So I would love to see that. But yeah, Phoenix, yeah, I would assume Paul comes back at some point during this series, especially if it's not like a clean sweep or anything. I definitely should be back for the finals if they were to make it that far.
On the flip side of that, though, the Jazz. So they didn't have Conley until game 6, right?
I mean, until the last game, yeah.
Yeah. You were the best team in the West this year. You've clearly seen the progression of Donovan Mitchell. I don't know if everyone's under contract. Well, Gobert definitely is. Mitchell has to be, I think.
I think Mitchell's up for an extension, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he'll get that. I mean, that's a given. Bogdanovich, I think, is still fine because they didn't do a sign and trade. They had to sign him.
I'll say this, though. If they – you know, they could come back with pretty much the same roster next year and be, you know, a top tier seed and team in the Western Conference in the regular season. But if they really truly want to become a better team and really make a push to the finals, straight up Bohan Bogdanovic has to be just turned into a better player. Like, he needs to probably be traded, or they need to sign someone. Like, he's great. He does a lot for their team. But when it came to those games against the Clippers, his inconsistencies showed up. You need a player who, when it comes down to it, is going to perform in those moments rather than shy away. Unfortunately, Bogdanovic wasn't able to show up enough. I think that's like the clear upgrade spot you could have. Maybe swing him in Ingles or somebody. I don't know. I think that's the move they could make that would really set them over. Maybe a John Collins type, as I always suggest.
Of course. I don't disagree. I think Bogdanovich, though, has a lot more potential to him. I've seen him play a lot better when he was on the Pacers. Wow, it feels like forever that he's, you know, he's only been the Jazz for a short amount of time, but to me, it's like, can't remember when he wasn't. What I will say is I'd say run it back, and I'd give Quinn Snyder another year, obviously, but if you get another second round exit, especially with a continued success, I think you got to look for another coach too.
Yeah, I agree. I think he deserves, like, I mean, being the one seed, you definitely give him the one more year. But yeah, if you can't, I mean, it's been this core for a little while now. If you can't crack at least the conference finals, something needs to change, whether it be coaching or personnel, whatever it is. But a great season for Utah, the best record in the NBA, unfortunately for them, eliminated in the conference semis. So Clippers down 102, Phoenix, they play game 2 tonight. And now we have the wonderful Eastern Conference to get to. Both semifinal games went to 7. I'm going to start, just rip the Band-Aid right off, with Atlanta and Philadelphia, the Hawks forcing game 7, and Embiid's been playing on what we assume is a torn meniscus. And man, Philly had a lead, a big lead. Atlanta comes tearing back. Trae Young putting up yet another fantastic stat line, and Atlanta tops Philadelphia, moves on as the 5 seed to the conference finals. Second year in a row, the 5 seed advances to the conference finals in the East. And Philly, number 1 seed, also getting sent home in the second round. Second year in a row, the number 1 seed in the Eastern Conference gets sent home in the first round. As a Sixers fan, I understand you are probably not feeling too great right now, and I'm truly sorry. But what can you really take away, other than the Embiid injury and maybe the Danny Green injury, can you take away from what really was the cause of the downfall? Was there anything else, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's been harped on everywhere, but Ben Simmons. I hate to say it, but Ben Simmons offensively really shied away in that game, and that was disappointing. I think also, though, and this probably will get, you know, blurred into obscurity. I know I'm biased, but the refereeing in those games was just egregious. It seemed like the Hawks, if you breathe on them the wrong way, they have a foul shot. The Sixers, you could that photo of John Collins, you know, doing a poster dunk on Embiid. John Collins has him in a headlock.
Literally.
I don't know what to say anymore about those calls. That was really frustrating. You can't gravitate all towards calls, but I don't know. Like, Trae Young shot pretty poorly, but there are other games in the series where it just seemed like you'd run around people and like throw up the ball and would get a foul call. Kevin Huerter had the game of his career, which was disappointing to see after locking down Trae Young, because everything seemed to work out pretty well. Bogdanovich got hurt, so you didn't have to deal with him because he had a hot series. It just, one of the things, and I've probably harped on this a lot, is the Sixers, when it comes down to a close game down the stretch, especially if they're down, like by three, there is no closer to bring them back. The closest thing they ever had to that was Jimmy Butler. And Joel Embiid can do a whole lot, but I'm not having him shoot a three-pointer to end the game. I'd rather it be someone else. Tobias Harris also deserves a good amount of credit. I mean, he had 21 points or 20-ish points, but he shot like 9 for 21. Inexcusable. Ben Simmons especially. It is actually incredible that Seth Curry gets paid $8 million a year, because he carried the Sixers through game 6 and did a lot in game 7.
He's going to earn himself a little extra money. I guess we should just take a second and strictly talk about Ben Simmons, as that's what's been talked about most in the media ever since the Sixers dropped that last game. Ben Simmons put together the worst free throw percentage in an NBA playoff run with a minimum of 70 attempts, 33%. Not pretty. People, you know, Sixers fans especially wanted to talk about how great he is at defense, because he is, you know, he was a unanimous selection on the all-defensive first team. Okay, that's great. That's sensational. But we live in a league where offense is fantastically more valuable than defense. And unfortunately, Ben Simmons is horrible at scoring the basketball. And that truly came out in this series, not just the free throws. I mean, he had a dunk attempt at the end of a game that he just didn't take. It was just some bad decision-making. He is an aggressive offensive player, but he is not an aggressive scorer. He doesn't look to shoot the basketball or score when he should. And that has turned from this is just a cute thing that he does. We got Toby, we got Joe, we'll be fine. And mutated into, the guy with the basketball can't score. The guy who is constantly running our offense doesn't really have an option to score himself. That is tough. You know, Seth Curry shouldn't have to do what he did to keep the Sixers in that game late. Like, that's just Ben Simmons. I don't think it's going to be brought out if it is ever brought out in Philly. Unfortunately, I don't know if he's going to get traded. I don't. I think it'd be crazy, but also sometimes you just need to shake things up, as this process has been going on for a while now without a conference finals appearance. But again, I have high faith in the ability of Ben Simmons, but if he can't figure it out on offense, scoring the basketball, I mean, it's his career is going to drastically change. The amount of money he can earn, the accolades he could achieve, the championships he could win, and most importantly, what team he's playing for in 2 months could drastically change just based off of his inability to score the basketball.
And I echo the same sentiment. Let's rewind a bit, though. Because, Ben Simmons, I think, should shoulder a good amount of blame. However, we got to talk about Doc Rivers. Honestly, is it so drastic to say that I want him out?
Yes, it is.
I don't disagree with the fact that I think I'm being a little bit like just overzealous. At the same time, though, he has not been to the conference finals since 2011, 2012. He blew a 3-1 lead last year, which is why he got fired. And this year, he didn't blow a game lead, but he blew 2 20-plus point leads. And then as much as like every person wanted to blame Ben Simmons for that loss, which I think, you know, may have been a bit too much, but being asked if Ben Simmons is the point guard for this team and it's going, I don't know.
Yes, it's not a good look.
You had a great tweet about it today. Ben Simmons is either going to become like the greatest player of all time, or he's going to fade in obscurity. That is 100% correct. And honestly, if Ben Simmons demands a trade this summer, I wouldn't be shocked. He deserves some of the blame here. I'm not going to defend him against that. But just how much people have turned on him. And I think there's like a little bit of warrant to it, but this guy, like, I don't know how mentally tough he is, but that's got to weigh on you eventually. You got to be so fed up with it, especially if your coach like just kind of disparages you like that. The dude, I think to save face, is going to lock himself in a gym this entire summer instead of playing in the Olympics, just so people won't get upset with him. And like, honestly, I think it's going to take a toll on him. I think we're going to have another Markelle Fultz situation, not to the same purpose of he forgot to shoot, because I don't think he really ever could shoot, but everyone is on his back and there's some, like, I think something is going to break mentally, and that concerns me.
Yeah, it's going to be a long and tough offseason for Ben Simmons. He has, again, a very clear image of what he needs to do, but his future is very in question at this point in time. One idea that came up in a potential trade possibility was San Antonio, get him in the Greg Popovich system. The trade itself presumably would be centered around DeJounte Murray, maybe DeMar DeRozan.
DeJounte Murray and send the rest of your team. Jesus Christ.
And probably some draft picks as well. But Ben Simmons under Greg Popovich does, in fact, sound terrifying, in my opinion.
Oh, No. Listen, San Antonio would be a great system for him. I'm not going to deny that. I don't think San Antonio could really offer much. I mean, they could offer DeRozan, but I think Sixers would be foolish to take that just from a, you know, longevity perspective. I mean, the trades I've seen, the big one that's been thrown around a lot is CJ McCollum for Ben Simmons. You could throw in, well, potentially a pick. It may honestly just be a player swap. That one to me seems like the most straightforward, because Portland needs to shake it up there. Philly may need to shake it up.
There's also the idea of Kyle Lowry and maybe a 1-for-1 or a Lowry and a pick or something for Simmons has come up. They say they want to do better than Lowry. That's been the goal, but there's not a whole, I mean, Lowry is a top 40 basketball player. There's not a whole lot better you're going to get.
Actually, let's backtrack on that for a second. We talked about this, you know, seems like eons ago, but trade deadline, Sixers have a chance to get Kyle Lowry. I don't know what the Sixers had to give up for him. Who knows? Cause he ended up not getting traded. If you get Kyle Lowry, assuming you give up, I'm going to guess you have to give up Maxey. We'll say you give up Thybulle as well. Maybe you give up Danny Green, which I guess kind of makes this hypothetical irrelevant, because Danny Green didn't play in the last three games. Do the Sixers win that series if they have Lowry? And let's, yeah, you get rid of Maxey. I'd say you get rid of Thybulle as well. And let's just say, you know, Danny Green's irrelevant in this case. I agree. I think Kyle Lowry would have been the piece down the stretch that would have won him the game.
And exactly. He can mark up Trae Young one-on-one, as well as most people can. He's an effective crunch time player. And as, you know, as good as Maxey was playing in certain points, like Maxey's contributions were extra. They weren't anything you were planning. They weren't anything like Tyrese Maxey wasn't changing the game in any way. Kyle Lowry being that player instead, he's going to change the game in a lot of ways.
I will say, though, he kept us in game six. We were down fast and he really pulled us back in. But yeah, you're right. It shouldn't have been asked for, but exactly. You know, he gave it. So it's good to see him developing. You know, effectively they can run the team back. I don't think any contracts are, maybe Danny Green's is expiring.
I think Danny Green's is expiring, but you might have a player some kind of option on it, but also like I would get rid of Danny Green.
Yeah, you're not wrong. They need to look. Dwight Howard's I think is up as well, but
yeah, we'll see what happens with that, because Dwight Howard's probably going to get offered a little extra money. I mean, we always say that, and then he always ends up having to sign for the veterans minimum. So we'll see. But Dwight Howard is an excellent backup center. If I was Philly, though, I'd try and keep him. He's a great backup for Joel.
I completely agree.
I would get some kind of extra forward depth. That's what I would go for.
That's as every year. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. We'll let you know about the Ben Simmons trade developments. I don't know how much is going to take shape, at least until the draft, if anything.
Sure.
But then, I don't think the Sixers are going to try and trade their way through the draft.
Nah.
They can't, honestly, at this point. To sum it up, for anyone listening that is a Sixers fan or just wants to see me sad, I am. I really thought this was the year. It sucks. It really does. Because after seeing the Bucks beat the Nets, which we'll get to in a second, I was like, this is the matchup we want, and then we just got to worry about the finals if we can win game 7. And we did not. The Hawks, I will say, like, they played a great series. They played tremendously well. Maybe they got a few calls here and there, but they stepped up. They really have surprised the entire league, which is kind of cool to see for such a young team. And I give them all the credit in the world for winning that. But I'm distraught and disappointed.
Very, very tough on the end of a Sixers fan. For Hawks, though, their first playoff appearance with Young and Collins as their duo, and they're going to the conference finals. Like I said before, the second year in a row, the 5 seed defeats the 1 seed in the second round in the East. Atlanta, like you said, will face Milwaukee, who survived the Brooklyn Nets, albeit an injured version of the Brooklyn Nets. We talked about how Kyrie was out and how Harden was going to kind of come back and replace him, but Harden kind of, you know, half came back and replaced him. And that first game back, we saw one of the most legendary playoff performances of all time. Kevin Durant, a 49, 17, and 10 point triple double in a massive comeback win for the Brooklyn Nets. However, Milwaukee stayed resilient. They won the next game, dominated the next game, actually. And then game 7, an absolute dogfight. Durant, for the second time that series, played every minute of the game. It goes to overtime. But you could see in overtime the sheer exhaustion that had hit Kevin Durant. He was short on his last 2 shots, including an air ball at the end that would have tied it. Tough way for Brooklyn to go out, but most general sports fans pretty happy to see that you can't buy a championship, especially, you know, Brooklyn was kind of limping towards the finish line. That roster pretty unimpressive outside of those stars. So without all three of them, they struggled. And Milwaukee, perhaps the dumbest team I've ever seen advance this far in the playoffs in terms of basketball IQ. But lo and behold, this team is here. Mike Budenholzer's job probably secure for at least one more year. Giannis had an excellent series despite some questionable decisions. Same with Middleton. I don't expect them to run into too much trouble here with Atlanta, though. I think Holiday is an excellent player to put on Trae Young. I think Giannis is an excellent player to put on John Collins. I don't think Atlanta has an option for Chris Middleton, especially with Hunter out. Solomon Hill is not the option you're going to want to go with. I think Atlanta might steal a game or two. It's definitely possible. They're hot. They've played well. But I think this is going to be Giannis's first trip to the finals. However, I will say that if either of the two Western Conference teams are fully healthy, and by that I just mean if Kawhi and Paul come back, I believe the Western Conference team is going to win, simply because as athletic and scary as the Bucks are, I think both of those Western Conference teams are smarter. Kawhi's been here before. Chris Paul's just been in the NBA forever, and Devin Booker's ready to go. I think those two teams have the Bucks number a little bit, but this is an important year because, like I always say, you kind of need to lose before you can win at the highest level. If Giannis makes it to the finals, he's well back on his way and on the right track to, you know, top of the all-time list in terms of what he wants his future career to be.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting if it's the Clippers Bucks, because I don't know if Kawhi will actually come back. Who knows? We thought there were reports he may have tore his ACL. We have not heard anything on that regard yet. So honestly, who knows? He's gonna like come. He's gonna like a WWE entrance. He's gonna come out like in the smoke, like in the third quarter, and like, oh my god, it's Kawhi. And just like point at him. He just like walks into the court, and everyone's like just stops. And yes, that would be probably the coolest thing I'll ever see in my life if that happens. Yeah, I don't imagine the Bucks will have a whole lot of problems beating Atlanta. Like you said, maybe a game or two. We have also counted Atlanta these past two series saying they will get a game or two, and then they have shown us up. We will eat our words in that. The fact the Sixers blew two 20-point leads just is infuriating, but I digress. I think the Bucks, though, they'll have their number. They're healthy for the most part. I mean, DiVincenzo's done for the year, but I think they'll make do. Let's go back to the Nets for a second, because I do think we thought, I believe we publicly said on here that the Nets would be fine in the series. Budenholzer should be shot out of a cannon. Now, I think that was before Kyrie Irving got hurt, and that they were just playing so well without James Harden. I'm not going to say Kyrie Irving was the reason the Nets like were winning games, because that would just pain me. I don't think I could, and I don't think it's true. I will say, though, I got to give credit to James Harden. You're not going to like that sound. I know you don't like the sound of that, but he's battling through what seemed to be a pretty substantial hamstring injury. He wasn't scoring 30-plus a game like he could do in the Rockets, but just to be out there definitely helped, because he was an option. He was playing and could score. He's playing
big minutes.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant played the entirety of Game 5. I think played the entirety of Game 6.
Yeah. Or he sat not 6, but definitely 7.
Yes. He sat like 2 minutes then.
Yeah. The thing with Harden and that hamstring injury, it was one of those where like you either had to play him a massive minutes load or not at all, because if you let somebody sit down and let that hamstring tighten, they're done. They're not going to be helpful. So they actually played it really well. One of the most iconic moments at the end of that incredible Game 5 performance from Durant, Steve Nash just hugs Kevin Durant at the end of the game. He goes essentially saying, thank you for carrying us across the finish line today, because we had no answers. We had a limping Harden and nothing else. I will say, though, Joe Harris did not earn his money this series.
No.
Blake Griffin actually played a very good series, I thought. Yeah. I thought he was great. But guys like Joe Harris, Landry Shamet played all right. He had his moments, but he's only so useful. But, you know, some of those role players are going to need to move. I don't know what Nick Claxton was ever doing on the court, but he was making some appearances every now and then. They got to get DeAndre Jordan off that roster for the sake of clearing up some cap space. But they got some clear issues to work through. They need some more defense, because they don't really need a whole lot of offense outside of their guys.
And I think that'll be – if they clear a bit of cap space this summer, I think they could really add a few people. That'll give them a little bit more depth. I mean, they were depleted after the Harden trade. Makes sense. But, I mean, it's good that a super team isn't winning it. I want Kevin Durant to win a championship, because I do like the guy. James Harden, I think, deserves one. You know, you can disagree with me all you want about that, but I think just from what he's done, but I also think Russell Westbrook deserves one too.
Sure.
Kyrie Irving, though, I never want to see him win a championship.
Uncle Drew, baby. He already has this. That's all right.
I know. Just Kyrie Irving to me, just we've, you know, delved with this before, but the philosophical kind of stuff that he
flat earth, baby.
I don't know. There's just it seems like he's trying to act smarter than he is. And that's just annoying. I'm going to not go into a rant. I'm more than happy to talk about it to anyone who cares to listen, but I'll save you that speech. Steve Nash, though, honestly, a great first season. He had a great roster around him. I'm not saying like Steve Nash is, you know, the sole reason they got to the semifinals, but he did a good job. He'll be back, I'd assume.
I would assume.
I'm going to guess D'Antoni gets a job somewhere else, though. I don't think he's staying in the system for that long.
It doesn't sound like he's the top choice in Portland, but I did see that he, among some of the other guys we mentioned in our last episode, are getting a second interview, Chauncey Billups, Becky Hammon, among the names.
Yep.
So we'll see how that goes and if that's where D'Antoni ends up. But, yeah, solid season for the Nets. Championship or bust maybe had been the mindset before the injuries, but So that's the playoffs. We have a little bit of extra news for the NBA. One of the most hilarious trades that you're ever going to see did in fact go through. Boston, I don't know what they're trying to do. They traded. So the trade was Boston sends Kemba Walker, a 2021 first round pick and a 2025 second round pick to the Oklahoma City Thunder in return for Al Horford, Moses Brown, and a 2023 pick. The meme of the week was the only trades that ever happened in the NBA are the Oklahoma City Thunder trading for a first round pick and the Boston Celtics trading for Al Horford. It is absolutely the case here. We're going to get to Kemba Walker in our next segment, or at least I am. But this is interesting in terms of what his value really was, because obviously he had a tough season with the injury and coming back. And when he's not at his peak level at offense, you know, he's not a good defender. So it's tough to gauge his value. But this trade makes no sense to me. I think Al Horford is a useful piece, but an overpaid piece. I think Moses Brown is a promising young center, but I don't think he's necessarily the he's Hassan Whiteside. That's what he is for a Boston team that doesn't really need that with all the center depth they have. Robert Williams, Tristan Thompson. I don't know if Thompson will be back, but so that was a question mark there to bring in two centers essentially, and then to also trade a former All-Star and a first round pick for these guys. I mean, Al Horford better win Coach of the Year at this point. That's minimal value on Kemba Walker, who I would have assumed would have had at least been able to bring Boston a little bit more in the terms of the treasure trove.
Yeah, so I mean, I text you immediately because I was laughing my ass off about it. I think part of it is Al Horford's contract is like, I think, $12 to $14 million less per year. So you get a little bit of salary space. Okay, fine. The Celtics get Al Horford, which I don't think is a good for their championship run. Who knows? Maybe he's just unlocked in Boston. I could be wrong, and not Philly or OKC. Yeah, Moses Brown. I don't know much about him. You know, maybe they're just so in on Moses Brown. They trade a first round pick as well.
He's useful. He's your stereotypical shot blocking, rebounding center. He doesn't really do a whole lot.
He's Boston's Robert Williams. Got it. All right. So he's going to be another one of those players that they just go nuts for, who scores like 6 points a game and then will score like 18 some random game. They're just like, he's the future with Tatum.
Exactly.
All right.
But what I'm curious about, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say poor Kemba, because Michael Jordan was right. Who would have thought?
So that's what I want to bring up here is, now I would assume Oklahoma City doesn't necessarily have plans to keep Kemba Walker. What are the potential trade destinations that would be good suitors for him? Some of the names that I heard and brought up, the Lakers are definitely going to be a name that's in the running for him. I think the Sixers are going to take a look at him.
I don't like that.
And I also think Toronto is going to take a look at him. It may be some kind of three-team deal potentially with Lowry going somewhere else.
If the Sixers trade Ben Simmons for Kemba, if those are the headlines of the package, I will burn my sweatshirt 100%. I will be so enraged that you cannot do that. The Sixers getting Kemba is maybe fine if it's like a buyout type deal. His contract's ridiculous, especially with what the Sixers have to work with. Yeah. I really think the Lakers want every player, but have nothing to offer other than like their two superstars for cap space. And they're not going to get rid of AD or LeBron, or they shouldn't. I got to imagine Kemba Walker's got to be in the market for a buyout, just because I don't think many teams are going to be able to do much with him. I mean,
I just thought of one more team that might actually be able to. I don't know what their salary looks like, but the Knicks.
That's actually a fair point, because I could see him going to the Knicks. Another interesting option would be the Dallas Mavericks, just because they need some other piece, but that will not work.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
It would be. That's Dennis Smith. That's an upgrade Dennis Smith Jr. alongside Luka, which literally does not work. I would say the Knicks. I don't know if the Knicks will. Who could the Knicks offer? You'd have to probably give up. Let's think. We're the Thunder, so we want all the young players and all the draft assets.
So like Kevin Knox.
Ew.
I mean, Kevin Knox has minimal trade value just because he's so young.
Mitchell Robinson, maybe?
I don't know if you saw. I think Mitchell Robinson probably has a little more value just because he's athletic.
What about
maybe like?
Oh, I thought of something that's gonna make all Knicks fans cringe. RJ Barrett.
Okay, I would do that. I don't think RJ Barrett's gonna get that much better than Kemba Walker is right now, so I would do that.
I don't think you'd probably give RJ Barrett maybe another player and like a pick or two, because after that, well, I'm okay, maybe not, maybe like two players and a pick, because I think RJ Barrett is a reasonable piece. You're getting like a shooting guard, well, to pair along with SGA. You get your picks, because you all, I know in the grand scheme of things, OKC cares more about the pick than the player.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think you get Mitchell Robinson out of it in that case. But, yeah, Kemba and – oh, I mean, another thought would be Quickly. Emmanuel Quickly.
I feel like they're going to want to hold on to Quickly, especially because my guess is Rose is gone. So you're going to be a little weaker at point guard. I don't know if Peyton will still be around.
That would be a swindle if they end up getting Derrick Rose as well, and then like trading him somewhere for picks. Cause I'm sure the Lakers would want him, or even the Clippers.
Yeah. The Lakers are going to go after a point guard. Cause it doesn't, from what it sounds like at this point, Schroeder's probably gone.
Do you think Sam Presti is like going to try and trade in all his picks for like a number one overall pick? Like
I will give you 15 first round draft picks for Kevin Durant.
Maybe it's one of those, he's gonna try and bribe him with draft picks for another ping pong ball or two. Sam Presti's gonna own the entire draft in a few years, and it's just gonna happen.
The Oklahoma City Thunder are going to have the entirety of the first round of the 2023 NBA draft. I'm certain of it.
But he's smart though, because he knows the high schoolers are gonna like be allowed to go in the draft, and when that happens, he knows.
You know, he's ready for it.
I think the last thing we'll talk about, you know, the draft lottery is coming up shortly. Honestly, I would 100% would love if OKC got the first overall pick as well. They won't, but I would love that.
Well, we'll see. It'll be between like them, the Pistons, the Rockets, the Timberwolves. Cleveland will probably be in that mix. It'll be interesting. Cleveland will probably get it just because they seem to always get it.
Of course.
Who knows? Maybe the Timberwolves will get it a second year in a row.
Maybe the Magic. You could throw them in there.
They fell hard, especially after trading Vucevic.
All right. I think that's the news. Oh, no. One more.
One more bit of news here. So the Harlem Globetrotters making a splash in the world of basketball, potentially wanting to expand themselves into the NBA, if you want to elaborate on that a little bit more.
I guess president or owner of the Harlem Globetrotters wrote a official petition to the NBA and Adam Silver saying that they would like a team in the NBA for expansion. And there's two ways this can go. First and foremost, the Harlem Globetrotters are a storied franchise. They are undefeated except for like one game they lost to the New Jersey Generals. Great, great. I think the deal is the Harlem Globetrotters want to take their name and branding and become an NBA franchise. If that is the case, I am all for it because they have a rich tradition. I mean, I don't like the fact New York has three teams now, but to me, like Harlem Globetrotters, so be it, because they're recognizable. It's a big market. Now, this is what a lot of people are clowning them about. If they want to take their existing team and just bring that to the NBA, oh my goodness, I will bully them out of existence.
I mean, they would go 0-82.
Yes, 100%. Like
they get run out of every gym every night. They would not be able to compete with the best of the best in the world. These guys are showmen. They are not
true
basketball players. Yes, they're so much fun to watch if you've never been to a Globetrotters game.
I would actually love, though, we bring the Globetrotters in. They get their own. No, actually, Harlem Globetrotters have to keep their team. New Jersey Generals come in. They do their expansion drafts, and the New Jersey Generals just bully them.
It is mean.
I want some weird, like, just universe where that occurs, and I'm all here for it.
I'm fine with that, and, you know, we're big on the multiverse theory here, so I'm sure it's happening somewhere.
But if we're talking expansion teams, give Buffalo an expansion team. I'd love to have some basketball in there.
Hey, Iowa City, baby, if I get stuck here.
They have God, you have your G League team.
We do have the I think it's the Iowa Wolves now. It used to be the Iowa Energy.
I was going to say, it was a really bad team name.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We will update you on the men's Olympic team roster when it's more complete. We were going to do that today, but we'll just save it for when the roster is official. As we have a new segment that we're going to move into here to end the show. It's also going to be kind of an ongoing segment that we're going to do for a couple episodes. Maybe we'll do it every week. Maybe we will alternate just to keep it fresh. But so Alex and I have composed our list of the top 50 current active players in the NBA. So what we're going to do is we're going to start at 50. We're going to go down the list, do a little explanation as to why we have our players where we do, talk about them each for a little bit, move down. So we're going to start, we're going to say 10 for now, see how long the episode's gone after about five and go from there. So we'll start at the very least with 50 through 46 to start. Alex, you want to give it a go and let us know who the 50th best player in the NBA is in your eyes.
All right. I'm going to say the 50th best player is LaMelo Ball, point guard for the Hornets. And a lot of these rankings that I did are based off of value for a team. If you can place them in another system or like switch out a player, how they would do, obviously statistics and potential too. Cause if you're a younger player and you're playing well, like, you know, there's a lot of potential there. Being the rookie of the year, revitalizing the Charlotte Hornets to a degree, I got to give it up to LaMelo. I don't think he's like, I think the potential really adds on to his value in this case, but I'm going to start with number 50 being LaMelo Ball.
I like that. I don't personally have a rookie from this past class in the top 50, but if one would be obviously LaMelo, excellent rookie campaign. Number 50 for me, man, literally to the last second before this episode has been toying with 50. I have a few honorable mentions that didn't quite make the cut. But when I finally, you know, I've been judging on, you know, what you're good at, statistics, like you said, obviously, you know, how far you've been, how good you have been, how good you are, how, you know, to a lesser extent, how good you could get, because we're talking about how good you are right now. But, you know, potential does play into that. Like you said, ability to kind of transfer from system to system and just honestly how dominant you are at what you do, how good you are at doing the little bits of everything you need to do. So for me, some of the number 50 really came down to the fact that this player is maybe not the best, but he's probably top three at what he is good at in basketball. So number 50 for me was Andre Drummond of the Los Angeles Lakers. Oh. It was tough to put him on this list because he is so bad at lots of things like offense and free throw shooting. But when you talk about rebounding the basketball, he is, if he's not the best rebounder in basketball, he is a top three rebounder in basketball. You know, he's more of a stereotypical big burling big man. But I mean, he averaged 15 and 12. Those are not monster numbers per se, but 12 rebounds, I believe, was top five in the league. He didn't really get to mesh with the Lakers, but you saw him in Cleveland. Like Cleveland in the first half of the year was playing well, not great, but better. Drummond stops playing, they immediately start doing poorly. When you allow Drummond to get comfortable in the system, he can be a very useful piece. I mean, he's had years averaging like 18 and 15 before. I mean, the dude can be an animal. That's why I had him at number 50. We'll see if he's still playing in LA next year.
All right. Number 49 is going to be a little bit polarizing. I went back and forth on this one. I put Tobias Harris on here.
Ooh, okay.
I know, because I just slandered him earlier, but I mean, he was averaging just shy of 20 points the entire season. He does have a lot of usefulness. I think he can play the three and four fairly well and is very useful for the Sixers. I mean, he's overpaid, don't get me wrong, but I think he's still a good basketball player. He's very consistent, and that's why I'm on here.
I respect the hell out of that pick. I actually have Tobias Harris higher on my list, so we'll get fair, to that. All right. Number 49 for me was like 50, kind of one of those I waited till the last second to officially kind of lock in. And it was partially actually based off of their current playoff run. So number 49 for me is the power forward from Atlanta, John Collins. Okay. If you've listened to this podcast a long time, you know, I like to talk highly about the Wake Forest product. Averaged about 17 and a half game, 7.5 rebounds a game this year for Atlanta. He's been the second best player on a team that's now in the conference finals. He's kind of a do-it-all power forward. He can shoot. He's getting better at defense. He can attack the rim. Excellent, excellent piece. I think helps improve most systems. Whether he fits in every system may be up for debate, but I think in the right system, he can only really improve it. I see a very bright future for John Collins as, you know, one of the premier stretch fours, smaller fives in the league. I mean, he's got through Joel Embiid, being an injured Joel Embiid, but Joel Embiid nonetheless. So 49, John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks.
All right, number 48. I think I got this one went a little bit kind of a historical pick. I went with Kyle Lowry.
Wow, that's low.
But the Raptors did not do well this year.
You're right.
And he is – oh, he's getting old. I think – is he 37? No, he's 35, I think.
He's not quite 37. But yeah, he's, I think 35, 30.
This is the Emmanuel Sanders debate, just literally in basketball. But I think he's had a historic career. I think he's just slowly starting to regress just from the age and, you know, not having a whole lot of help. But I went with Kyle Lowry there. I mean, I still think he's got a few years left in the tank, but I put him at 48.
This is actually really adorably fitting. For number 48, I put DeMar DeRozan.
Okay.
For those who don't know, they are best friends. DeMar DeRozan of the San Antonio Spurs. Obviously, his career has taken a downturn since coming to San Antonio. But I still think one of the more intelligent players in basketball, one of the better mid-range finishers that we have, averaged 21.5 points per game, 6.9 assists, A, also B, fantastic. 6.9 assists is a very nice number, especially for someone who isn't a point guard.
Nice.
Exactly. I think DeRozan, if he was in a better system, would still be the flashy player we knew him as before. We'll see how his career continues to progress, but for now, I still comfortably place him in my top 50. He's the best player on a team that, you know, they barely made the play-in, but they did. He's a pretty good guy, pretty good player. I like him a lot.
Well, that's funny you have him there because I actually have at number 47, DeMar DeRozan.
Very nice.
So we were at least kind of in the same ballpark there, which is good because honestly, I don't know how much we're going to line up with these. But yeah, DeMar DeRozan, you know, forward for the Spurs, kind of hitting that point in his career. We started on the decline a bit, still a very serviceable player, you know, great career, obviously, but right now, you know, just inside the top 50, but that's where I'm going to put him.
Yeah, I respect it. 47 for me, as I said, it's going to piss you off a little bit. And honestly, it pisses me off a little bit, but I had to put him in the top 50. Kristaps Porzingis of the Dallas Mavericks, coming off probably the worst playoff series he's ever played against the Clippers. Kristaps, in just 43 of 72 games this year, averaged just a tad over 20 points, just a tad under 9 rebounds. For his size, he should be better, plain and simple. The reason he's in my top 50 is because the two things he's good at, shooting the three for how big he is and blocking shots at the rim, he is very good at. His issues lie in his health and his mobility. He's, you know, he was demanding shots when the Mavericks were losing in the playoffs, but he's not somebody that's a shot maker or shot creator. He's somebody who has to be worked into the offense to get the open looks. He has the ability and the body to be this dominant, great basketball player. The issues mainly lie in his health and ability to stay on the court, but then also his aggressiveness and assertiveness. There is a very good chance that I wake up tomorrow and think, I should not have had Kristaps Porzingis on this list. But for now, 47 is where he stands.
I hate it just from how bad he played in the playoffs. That's all I'd say. But I think my next pick at 46 is not going to make you happy. I put Cat.
I actually love that. I have him higher, but I do love that you have him this low. Please explain.
Is a soft. I mean, he's the center for the Timberwolves. Timberwolves haven't been good since Jimmy Butler's been there. I think that one's self-explanatory. He puts up great numbers, but I don't imagine, like, he's the quote-unquote star in that system, but I cannot imagine, like, him going to another system and being extremely useful. That's my problem. And he just hasn't done much, really.
He hasn't done anything. He's a gifted offensive player, but he's barely on the court, and, yeah, he's a liability on defense. I got no qualms with that lower rating for him. I actually, like I said, I love that. 46 for me. This is somebody who I think probably deserves to be a little higher on this list, but is limited by his physical stature. Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors. I love Fred VanVleet. He's an absolute baller. He hits these crazy, stupid shots, these timely shots. And honestly, for his small frame and stature, an excellent defensive player. NBA champion. But, well, you know, the Raptors struggled this year, like you said. I think they're gearing up to trading Lowry and kind of giving VanVleet the reins of the offense as the point guard for him and Siakam to kind of take over. And I think that's going to benefit VanVleet a lot. But for now, I think his impact is a little limited by having Lowry on his team. But, man, if I'm talking about, like, players I would love to play a game of basketball list, Fred VanVleet is probably at the top of that list. Like, the dude just said, like, he looks like just such a fun player to play with.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. He is an honorable mention for me. He's cusping it in my opinion, but I don't disagree with that. I think he's really made a name for himself. 45. I have Gordon Hayward.
Okay, we're close on Gordon Hayward.
This is one where people will disparage him to the cows come home, but to me, Gordon Hayward. Can shoot reasonably well, can play. He's not what he was in Utah. At the same time, though, I'd be more than happy to have Gordon Hayward on my team, and I feel like a lot of people would say that. I think he's a little bit overpaid, but he had a pretty good year, all things considered. I mean, the Hornets got into the playoffs, the playing game at least, and while LaMelo Ball had a hand in it, I think Gordon Hayward also played a pretty big part. So time will tell with that, but that's where I have Gordon Hayward.
I like that rating a lot. 45 for me is going to be the Oklahoma City guard, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. His potential is through the roof. He is going to be a superstar in this league for years to come. My issue with putting him higher on the list is, yes, he had an excellent season, but it was on the worst team in basketball, or one of the worst teams in basketball. It was like that Michael Carter Williams year, and to an extent, like no crap, he was going to put up these great stats because somebody had to. I think he's better than that by a lot. I mean, almost 24 points per game, almost 6 assists, almost 5 rebounds. He is going to be a star, but right now there are still a handful of players with some more, mostly just IQ than him. But once he's just kind of been in the league long enough and really has his footing, oh, the Thunder have one of their corner pieces, that's for sure.
All right. Next, I got Jeremy Grant.
Grant was someone I also he was an honorable mention for me. I love him. He's so useful, but I thought about this list a lot in the terms of star power, and I just didn't know how much he had. But go ahead.
No, I mean, forward for the Pistons, a contender for most improved player this year, lost to Julius Randle, which I think is pretty fair. Brings the energy, brings the explosiveness, was just on a horrible team. And honestly, like, part of this list, I tried to put a player from each team on there because, for the most part, like, any team should have one player. The only team I left off here, and we'll spoil this, is the Rockets.
That's what I was going to suggest. I was like, Christian Wood is their best player.
Christian Wood's an honorable mention because he's been injured and kind of young. I thought about putting John Wall in here, but I just could not bring myself to do it. I put Jeremy Grant. I think he's on just a terrible team, but I really do think, I don't know where to go with Jeremy Grant. Like, I think he'll put up good numbers. Maybe he'll try and force his way out like Blake Griffin did. But, yeah, future's not too bright for Jeremy Grant in the sense of, like, what his team can do. But I think it is a future for him. He'll develop very well.
If he could find himself onto the right system, like if he gets himself to Portland or something like that, I think that could be terrifying. So that was 44 for you?
That was 44, yeah.
All right. This is going to – my next two are going to piss a lot of people off. This one a little less.
My next one's going to be
– the other guard from Oklahoma City, the incumbent, Kemba Walker. At number 44.
All right, wait. That was pause for a second. I thought you were going to say Lou Dort, and I was going to throw my computer.
Lou Dort, but no. Kemba Walker.
Okay.
With Boston last year, 19 points per game, 4 boards, just under 5 assists. Like we said when we talked about him being traded, He struggled this year on offense. It took him a while to get any sort of rhythm. Boston obviously had a tough year also. He dealt with the injury. I think he's incredible on offense when he's healthy. I think he's horrible at defense. I think he's almost useless at defense. I love Cardiac Kemba, but I don't know how much of that we're going to have left at this point. I don't think he's going to play a game for Oklahoma City. So like we said, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. But for right now, while he's still working through coming back from that injury, I'm going to keep him, you know, in the bottom 10 of this top 50, but 44 Kemba Walker of the now of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I felt bad keeping him off, but I think being Kemba undersized and being plagued with injuries just is going to hamper him. Like, I think, yeah, he'd want him on a team, but I don't know how long it would really give you.
Sure.
So, all right. My next one's really going to be polarizing, I think.
Me too.
Pascal Siakam.
Okay.
I have him low, and I know I do. I thought the stars are the limit for him. Oh, my goodness. You proved me wrong this year. He wasn't bad, but he was not what I was expecting. Yeah. He really had a third-year slump and did not look good. The Raptors obviously missed the playoffs. I still think there's a lot of potential there, but I don't know. I'm a little bit hesitant to say, you know, the future's bright in Toronto.
So you're kind of asleep on this Toronto team in that case.
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
I was about to say, because you got both of them, or two, they're two best players from 50 to 41. I have three Raptors on this list, and I only have one that I'm going to get to today. So that's interesting.
Because I think Kyle Lowry either is out of Toronto or is, you know, kind of running out of steam. You know, he's getting old. There's nothing he's had a great career, but Siakam, it's just right now, because between the injuries, between sort of the meltdowns and all that, I can't.
I'm with you. He's a little higher for me, but it was tough. I really did think about lowering him, because you're right. He had a very tough year, you know, after Kawhi's gone, and then the year after that, he didn't have it as much. 43 for me is also a bit of a doozy. I'm really I'm so excited to say this. Zach LaVine.
Wow.
Zach LaVine averaged 27 points per game, 5 boards, just under 5 assists. First-time All-Star. Especially Bulls fans that I got to talk to love talking about how great he was in the clutch, keeping the Bulls in games. And sure, he was good at keeping them in games, but how good was he at actually winning the Bulls games? Because I think he was pretty bad at that. I don't even know if they won 30 games this season, and they paired him with another star player. I think LaVine got really overrated because he's a very good scorer and a very athletic player, but he is useless on defense. He's not a true playmaking guard as much as he should be, I guess. And as I've said for the last few years, I think he's kind of peaked as a basketball player. This was the best year of his career, but in terms of like what he's good at, he's not learning any new skills. He's just getting slightly better, slightly more athletic at the things he's already good at. Eventually that will reach its limit and he will stop improving, and the Bulls will not have gotten a whole lot better because of it. Zach LaVine's one of those players that I've just never really understood why people like him so much.
All right.
Bulls fans, have your fun, but
I will say, ask one question, and this will determine my reaction to that. Is Vucevic on your list?
Yes.
That's a fucking disgrace.
You think LaVine's better than Vucevic?
Absolutely, 100%. Really?
Yes. I think Vucevic is one of the smartest players in basketball. I don't think Vucevic is like, I don't think I have him as a top 25 player or anything like that.
Sure, yeah, that's fair. But like,
that's one of those weird things. It's like, it's weird to say that Vucevic is the, because I wouldn't necessarily say, I would really say Vucevic is the best player on that team. But like, in terms of what I value in a basketball player, I see more of that in Vucevic than I do in Zach LaVine.
All right. That's what I mean, though. Zach LaVine is so much more useful, scores more. I think there's more potential, obviously, but it's fine.
This is why we debate things, man. That was one of the big ones that I marked that I was like, this is going to piss people off.
All right. I have 42. I have Drew Holiday.
Okay, that's pretty close to where I have him, I think.
I think he's very useful, both from a point guard facilitator and a defensive player for the Bucks. Also kind of getting up there in terms of age. To me, that's just kind of where I have him. I don't have any qualms with it. I think it's pretty fair. Like, he's the third best player on a really good team. That's where I have him.
Yeah. No complaints here. 42 for me. Coming back to him is Gordon Hayward of the Charlotte Hornets.
Okay.
I love Gordon Hayward. A little bit injury prone, a little bit overpaid, but an excellent scoring option, a very solid rebounder for the small forward position. I think he's a great player to have paired with a young guy like LaMelo Ball. I think he's going to teach him kind of the secondhand things you just kind of figure out as a veteran player. He's going to kind of show LaMelo and highlight for him earlier on so he can figure it out a little faster. I really value what Gordon Hayward brings to the table. There's nothing he's bad at. He's solid at everything. He's good at everything. And when he shows up, the Charlotte Hornets are fantastic. Like, they're a very good basketball team. I mean, they were in the playoff race for most of the year until he went down for a couple weeks. And that was pretty telling. So 42 for me is Gordon Hayward.
All right, this will be the last one we'll do today. 41, De'Aaron Fox.
Wow, he didn't sniff my list.
Okay, fair. I just think he's incredibly athletic, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of really great intangibles with him. I think there's a lot of potential there. And, you know, the Kings suck, which is why we really don't watch enough of him. But when he's on the court, he's a great facilitator. They call him Swipe of the Fox for good reason. You know, decent defensive player, in my opinion. I am at 41. I really think if he was in a different system, he'd be a lot better and we'd notice him more. But like I said, the Kings suck. So point guard from Sacramento, good old my boy De'Aaron Fox.
I like De'Aaron Fox. I don't want to get that skewed in that he didn't make my list. Part of how I judged good players that are on bad teams was how bad are those teams? Like, how much of an impact are you having? That's why I put Shai Gilgeous so low on my list, because as well as he's playing, he's having no impact on the Thunder winning basketball games. Same with Zach LaVine. He's an excellent basketball player that's having no impact on the Bulls winning basketball games. That's kind of where I put him in that category. But I mean,
This also goes back to the fact that I did say, like, I really wanted to try and have one person per team. I just couldn't with the Rockets. I mean, Christian Wood was my sleeper. Or, sorry, not sleeper. My
honorable mention.
Honorable mention. There you go. But, yeah, that's fair. Like, the Kings suck. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And they're going to be in rebuilding hell for a number of years.
Definitely the best player on the Kings, though, without question. I do, like I said, yeah. I really like De'Aaron Fox. Probably the fastest player in basketball.
Yeah.
Big fan of that. Also big fan of the Fro game, as always. last one of the day for me will be Tobias Harris of the Philadelphia 76ers at my number 41. Honestly, I had to be talked into really liking Tobias Harris as a basketball player. He's definitely a system player. That's no question. He works great with Doc Rivers. And his role in Philly has been maximized, I believe, to about as good as it's ever going to be. He truly is the shooting closer option outside of if you want to go into the paint for Embiid. I think Tobias Harris brings a lot. He was very close to a 50-40-90 season, which is very impressive. Just a smidge under 20, I think 19.5 points a game, just under 7 rebounds, about 3.5 assists. Another one of these guys that does a little bit of everything. Where Hayward's a little bit better of a shooter, I think Harris is a better defender, which is why I put Harris over Hayward. Defense is a weird thing for this list. It's something I value very high, but also lots of players can't do. So it was interesting. But Tobias Harris, I think, is one of those just all-around, good at everything, almost Nick Batum-type players, you know, old-school Nick Batum, not current Nick Batum. He didn't make this list.
Number 50.
Tobias Harris, though, I really like, and I really value the game that he plays. So he is my number 41 to cap off today's set of 10 for this top 50. So I hope you guys enjoyed the first segment of this, as we will continue to do it over the next couple of weeks here and count down to our top 10 and who we think the best players in basketball are. Trust me, there are plenty more question marks and highlights to get to. I got one at the end that's going to really – it's going to bother a lot of people, and I'm really excited about it. So as Alex chugs the rest of his drink, that's what we have for you for this show. Again, hope you enjoyed the content. Hope you have a fantastic week, and I hope you choose to share it with us and our podcast as well. Until next week, we will hope you guys have a fantastic one. I'm mumbling my words here, saying the same thing over and over. But moral of the story is, have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time.
Take care, everyone.